When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome everybody to Flicker Effect. It is Wednesday, March 27th, 2024. I'm Dave Lott. Joining me this week is Bobby Jackson. How's it going, Bobby?
Good. Ready to talk about some Ghostbusters.
Indeed. But also with us is Michelle Hillard. Welcome back, Michelle.
Hello, everyone. Hi.
Missed you last week.
Oh, it's just 1 week.
So, yes, this week we are going to be talking about the new Ghostbusters film, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. That's probably going to be the big chunk of our conversation. If we find ourselves with some time after the review, maybe we'll see what other trouble we can get into. But, yeah, this is basically going to be a review of the film. And unless you guys have anything to start with, I guess we'll get right into it.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do it.
So, Ghostbusters Frozen Empire came out this past weekend. This is what, the fourth film in this Ghostbusters like universe, if you will, since now we have kind of a separate universe, I guess,
because side of
the one side film that was done. So the last film, Ghostbusters Afterlife, we have the same writers this time around, Gil Keenan and Jason Reitman, who wrote that last film. The big difference here, though, Jason Reitman was the director of Afterlife, and now Gil Keenan has taken over as the director of this film. So they did a little swap there for the director role. I was going to read a brief synopsis for IMDb, and of course now it's gone. But anyway, you've probably seen the trailers. You know what this is about. We're back in New York. We've got a new family of Ghostbusters. So we're going to get right into it. Quick heads up, though, before we start the review. As always, we'll talk about the film spoiler-free at first, and then if we do get into spoilers, which we absolutely will for this, we will give you plenty of warning before we get into spoilers in case you haven't seen the movie yet and you don't want it spoiled. Michelle, I'm going to start with you.
Okay.
You and I are, I know we're fans of Ghostbusters. We've started Ghostbusters cosplaying now at conventions that we attend. So we're definitely fans. I think you're in the same boat as me when it comes to Afterlife and how you felt about that movie, I think. Let us know. What did you think of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire?
I enjoyed Afterlife. I thought Afterlife had some issues, but I still enjoyed it. And I think, honestly, kind of the same with this. I don't think it's quite as well put together as Afterlife was. But overall, I still enjoyed watching this movie. I had a fun time with it. I think this is just a fun film. I mean, Ghostbusters should never be taken super seriously to begin with. But it's just an entertaining kind of idea, and it's fun, and I enjoyed it. I will say there's things I have issues with, for sure. There's things I don't think were quite necessary, things I don't think fit in 100%. But then there's a lot of things that really worked for me, honestly. Like, as far as we're trying to move the idea of Ghostbusters, and then this new cast of Ghostbusters moving them forward, especially as making them, a family, it's it's different and unique, and I like it. And it leads the door to be like, well, they could be the Ghostbusters for a little bit, and then maybe another group will come in and be the next Ghostbuster generation, you know? And I don't know. It's just one of those things that I enjoy. I think I grew up with Ghostbusters, and it's always kind of been a part of me, but this... No, I think the big bad, we'll call it, I guess, for
big
this
bad or villain,
big bad villain ghost guy. I thought it was good. I liked it. I thought it was original and different, and I think it shook it up and got it out of its repetitive kind of the way it was repeating a little bit. It was constantly revisiting history, and I think this kind of shakes it up a little bit. Like, it reminds me of when I was a kid, I'd watch the cartoons, too. You know, and every week it's a different ghost, it's a different situation, and this gives you that feeling. It gives you, like, okay, we're going into a new direction. This is a new step for them, like a new big bad to go against. But, no, I thought, I liked it. I like everybody. Like, I like Paul Rudd's character a lot in this one. I think I actually like it better in this one than the last one.
Paul Rudd's character?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then, like, the mom, you know, I think she actually didn't get as much screen time this time, but still, I found her enjoyable. I can't think of that actress's name.
Carrie Coon.
Carrie Coon.
Carrie Coon, which she's a really good actress to begin with. But, yeah, the kids are great to watch. There's some new characters that get introduced with Patton Oswalt as Dr. Warski, I think. Wartski. And then Kumail Nanjiani plays a random character, and we'll get more into him in spoilers, I guess, but he gets thrown into the loop of things, too. And I don't know how I feel about them, about their characters. I guess in a way, you know, Patton Oswalt's character would be passing on, like a knowledge torch. Because when you think about the original guys, you know, they are not getting younger. And I'm glad that they all showed up for this film, the three of them. But, yeah, the torch, if they want to continue with this franchise, passing the torch to have another history worm, you know, for the story to continue, I think that's a good way to go. And Patton Oswalt's a great... actor who has loved the Ghostbusters his whole childhood, and I think it's a good way to go. It's a good direction. But no, I can't really talk about my issues because they're very spoilery, but I thought it was a fun film from start to finish. I enjoyed it.
Very cool. Bobby, what did you think of Frozen Empire?
I think it's a perfectly fine movie. There's some things that work and some things that don't. There's story elements that work and story elements that don't. Some jokes land, some jokes don't. It was fine. I feel like, as Michelle said, it's now firmly planted in a new generation. The older characters are there, but they're mostly there as supporting characters and take a little bit of a back seat to the main cast that there is now, which is to be expected. But I think also within that, you would think you would highlight most of your new characters, if not evenly close to it. And I do feel like Carrie Coon doesn't get much to do on screen. And there's not much for Finn Wolfhard to do either. It's really McKenna's show in this. And that's fine for the most part. But I also thought that just because of the nature of it, you really have to be invested in her storyline and what's going on with her. And there's times of that storyline that I just wasn't really into. And so that kind of puts a little bit of a damper on the movie itself. And it wasn't until maybe Michelle was talking that I realized what I found missing in this movie for myself, I think. And it kind of goes back to Ghostbusters Afterlife, where we see that transition starting to happen. And you have, was it Spangler's daughter?
Yeah.
In Carrie Coon?
Carrie Coon, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in Carrie Coon. That she never felt the things, and it was it sort of skipped her and went to McKenna Grace's character, right?
Right.
And so I felt like now after watching this one and having seen Afterlife, I almost don't feel like I was quite ready for this to be the new generation, young generation of Ghostbusters. I feel like it would have been nice to have had maybe a little bit of a gradual transition to where that Afterlife movie where you get Carrie Coon and you get Paul Rudd, that could have been the start of an older generation of Ghostbusters, but still younger than the original Ghostbusters. And then you could add in within this movie a Patton Oswalt and the Kumail, and that could be an older set of Ghostbusters that you have with the younger cast and them kind of gradually going and then doing their own thing. And that's just me sort of thinking in terms of what I would have wanted. But as far as what I got, I think that it's now firmly, if not having already been, firmly planted in the area of family-friendly, fun movie for Ghostbusters. And that's all well and good and fine, if that's what it is, because I didn't leave the theater thinking, oh, I'll never watch another one of these if they make it. I just felt like, okay, it's now in this realm where this is a family-friendly movie to go see with the kids and all. And so I think that that's kind of where I'm at with it now. I've kind of made the peace that it's moved past what it was from the first movie, really, because even as they've sort of kind of gradually come, they've started to dip more into the family friendly aspect of it. But I think that, yeah, they're good for that kind of movie going experience and to not really kind of expect too much going into it. If this is where they continue going, depending on how this movie does, if they make another one, that's fine. And that's what my expectation will be, is not to look for it to be anything that reinvents the wheel or anything special, but just a family-friendly Ghostbusters movie going forward. So that's how I feel. I don't hate it. I didn't quite love it, but I did like it enough, I suppose.
Well, I don't hate it either, but I'll say I thought the movie was fine. Bobby, you and I in last week's episode kind of touched on our expectations for this movie. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we both agreed, like, I think almost exactly that we're like, well, this, I was expecting that this was just going to be, you know, okay, funny at times, but, you know, not funny at other times, like you were just saying. And, you know, we were not expecting too much, but we overall thought it'd be a good time. And that's kind of still how I felt about it. But even going in with those expectations, I guess I still walked out of the theater going, it was maybe a little under my expectations, like just a hair worse. You know, yeah, I'm a Ghostbusters fan. I admit that I've now started cosplaying as a Ghostbuster. I'm not super diehard about Ghostbusters, but I like the franchise. And I liked Afterlife. I do feel like I fall on the more positive, you know, and positive end of the spectrum when it comes to how I've heard the reaction to Afterlife. It's been very mixed. But I enjoyed that movie. And I also enjoyed that it did something very different by mm-hmm. going, hey, we're going to be in Oklahoma. And, you know, even from the trailers, I think a lot of us are going, what is going on here? But, you know, for me, it ended up being, you know, overall pretty good. Not perfect, but pretty good. Now we're kind of back to the let's do the whole same tried and true formula back in New York, which makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. At the same time, there's things about it that feel like it could still be different, you know, other than just being a new set of Ghostbusters. And then when it comes to the old Ghostbusters, I do love seeing them on screen. But there's a part of me, and this isn't a spoiler to say, it's very clear in the trailers that they also get in full uniform with their packs and everything. And like, for instance, that, like, there's, I think I would have been fine with them like making appearances and in supporting roles for the new Ghostbusters, mm-hmm. but they didn't necessarily, like, I didn't need to see them in their suit with their proton packs on for all the nostalgia reasons that I think, you know, most people would want to see that. It was like, I don't know, this feels a bit like much and forced, and I guess I'll get into spoilers the way some of the, those older Ghostbusters you use that I don't care for, kind of. But yeah, I don't know. Overall, the movie's fine, but I was kind of, I guess, disappointed in it, which is a bummer. So that's where I stand with my spoiler-free thoughts. Well, I mean, do we have anything else to say without talking about spoilers?
It's one of those movies that as soon as you start talking about it, you're spoiling the storyline, really. I mean,
I guess, yeah.
I mean, right now it's kind of like, yep, they're back at the Big Apple. They're all together, gang's all back together again, and they're busting ghosts. And there's going to be a big bad guy that shows up. And that's, I was like the best.
I was going to say, you started talking about like how Bobby wished there was maybe more of a transition, like with like a set of older Ghostbusters, and then slowly incorporating the kids.
Like if it just focused on the adults and the kids were kind of around in the background,
like they're apprentices.
Yeah, yeah, like guys, like you're still minors.
I mean, I guess somewhat similar in that vein of like maybe wanting more of a transition. I found myself thinking, in one sense, I think it's kind of maybe not a bad idea to just go, okay, we left Oklahoma in that last movie, and now we are just jumping into there are Ghostbusters, and then they're in the old firehouse and they're doing it. But I did find myself going, I don't know, part of me could have imagined maybe being happier with a more transition film in between those two, where it's like, okay, we're moving to New York, we're actually doing this. You know, I think a film where it's having still a Ghostbuster, quote unquote, kind of story there somewhere in that movie, that transition movie, it would have still been maybe kind of interesting to not just jump right into, hey, we are the Ghostbusters now. Like, and Ernie's character, Winston, is funding us. And
right. And then like while they're in the car driving cross country, you know, Ray calls them and he's like, guys, this thing's happened. Things are hitting the fan. So basically, as soon as you get here, we're gonna have to jump into this. You know, it's like, yeah, I'm with you. Kind of like give us a little more lead into, I mean, the film really does just jump into them being in New York and already established in New York for some period of time, which is really kind of unknown. But
and the after credit scene and, or the kind of even, I think it was like the end of the movie before the credits even started rolling in Afterlife. It's like that shot in New York and then hearing the car. And then you had the after credits scene that kind of already sets the stage somewhat for this being, okay, we are in New York, I guess. But still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I still found myself kind of wishing I could have actually seen some of what happened in between then and now, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
But yeah, if you guys don't have anything spoiler-free to discuss, we can jump in the spoilers. So, if you're listening and you have not seen Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, well, if you want to keep listening to this episode, you should go do that first and then come back and finish. We are going to talk about spoilers from here on out for the movie. You have been warned.
Spoilers, spoilers, spoilers.
Insert spoilers promo here.
Yep.
All right. So,
I guess, yeah. So, gosh, where to start? I definitely agree with Bobby. Carrie Coon did not have enough to do. Neither did Finn Wolfhard.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Which was disappointing. And while I am enjoying McKenna Grace, I think she is really forming into a quite a great young little actress.
Mm-hmm.
I could have done with that story just being kind of focused on her. I'll be honest. It was... yeah, I don't know. It seems like a lot they put a lot of weight on that character and that character story in this film.
Yeah, like I understood her being the obviously the lead of Afterlife, but I would agree. Yeah. Like I think a more balanced film and with this film would have made sense. Like balance among the four characters would have been a better move than what they did.
Yeah. I mean, on one sense, like it was nice to see that they progressed and there's a full lab and, you know, Lucky is there doing an apprenticeship, not an apprenticeship, but whatever.
Something, yeah, basically an apprenticeship, I think. She's or there, she's an internship or something.
An internship, you know. And I think that's, you know, great to kind of make that make sense for her to have left her home to go to New York City. And then the same with Podcast, you know, he's apprenticing under Ray. And yeah, so it was kind of nice to be like, okay, gang's all back in New York. That's cool. Okay, well, that kind of makes sense. Now that you explain why they would be away from their parents. That I get that now. But yeah, like I felt like everything just really hinged upon the character of Phoebe Spangler. And it was a little too, it was too weighty on that character, in my opinion. And then, well, I guess we'll get to this in a minute. But yeah, I also agree with what you said, David, where you said like the older guys, like the originals, I think they're used too heavy-handedly. I would agree with that as well. Like, is it always sentimental to see them suit up? Of course it is.
Totally.
Like, that was a part of my childhood.
But we also, it was a nice touch at the end of Afterlife.
It was. That's and then what, that could was
have
the
been,
moment.
That could have been the, that's the last time they put on the jumpsuits.
You know, and at this point, they're basically mentors. They should be used as the knowledge, you know? Like, basically the scenes that you get with them as regular characters was really all we needed from them.
And
them at the end was just not even necessary.
It almost feels like there's a version of this film where they did never suit up, but the studio was like, no, we got
to
see the old guys still
suit up.
And then like a change happened at one point to make that part of, you know, the full story.
Yeah.
I definitely could see a, you know, a situation where that's what happened.
Because they weren't needed to fight off the big bad guy at the end of the movie. It just worked. Yeah. It's the whole theory of Indiana Jones. Like, was it really needed to have this character in this film? But I think for me, the overall thing that would be my negative on this film, again, it's the focus on Phoebe Spangler and in cahoots with that situation, really the entire character of Melody, the ghost girl that Phoebe has a crush on. And
is it a crush? I was kind of curious about that with what they were they alluding to something there? I couldn't quite tell, but it
came off
like
crushy to me.
It came off crushy to me, but I would agree with you, Bobby, where it dances a line. Yeah, I was gonna say
it dances the line.
It dances a line
between
of like
just her wanting a really good friend.
Where it could just be, you know, that they are. It is just her wanting a really good friend. But there's
some moments.
There's things about the performances that seem like, at least to me,
there were lingers.
Yeah.
And has anybody totally pointed cool. that out?
I don't know.
I haven't seen anything yet.
I haven't sought out that to see what people have thought of that. And I also haven't just heard anybody or read anybody bring that up.
And to be clear, I'm very 1,000% cool with that.
Oh, totally.
It's more or less the,
I mean, well, the ghost part is a little, but
I don't know if we needed a ghost that was that interactive with our characters, that, I mean, for lack of a better word, real. I didn't need it, and like I don't like that they use her as basically the whole caveat to how the big bad guy escaped. It just, I was like, there's other ways you guys could have pulled this off, and it has nothing to do with a ghost girl. Like, it wasn't like I kind of bumped on this in the movie. This was the speed bump, in my opinion, in this whole film, was that character.
Not a big fan of the Melody friendly ghost.
I have nothing against that actress. I just, that character seemed like a cop out of I hate to say the easy way to do it, but I just feel like to get from point A to point B to point C in this film, and what we're essentially trying to do, there's other ways that could have gone about doing it that had absolutely nothing. You could have completely extracted that character. There's just, it just didn't seem necessary to me, and it just seems like they are trying to, the studio or something, I don't know what they're trying to do with this character. It just seems stupid to me. That's my
I didn't bump up against it, honestly, to be honest about it. Yeah, I didn't have an issue with the ghost or that storyline aspect of it. I thought more or less the part that I had more of an issue with, and not to any major degree, but just somewhat of an issue, is just the initial conceit of, hey, she's too young to be a Ghostbuster, so she's sidelined by the mayor, who was in the first movie as well.
Right.
But that was more like, okay, that seems like a silly plot reason to sideline the character to put everything in motion. I thought that could have been handled better. It could have just been
the mayor didn't need to do it, the mom could have done it.
Well, I mean, I think she could have just started off not being a Ghostbuster and feeling left out. She could be, they already had sidelined her in the first place, that they, you know, that they were responsible parents or adults,
right. Yeah.
And said that you're too young to be doing this in the first place. And she sits at home while they go out ghostbusting, and she feels left out, and the ghost comes in and introduces herself, and, you know, one thing leads to another with her wanting to prove herself and blah, blah, blah. But it just felt...
I would agree with it. I hadn't thought of that, but no, I think that would have worked better. You would have still had that dynamic of she wants to be a full Ghostbuster, but she can't. But I think you're right. I think what you're describing would have worked better than what they did. Mm-hmm. Sorry if
I cut you off. But yeah, outside of that, I don't even know who that actress was, but she seemed sort of familiar to me. So I may have seen her in something else and just couldn't place her as a ghostly looking figure. But
Emily Ellen Lind, I think is how you say her name.
She was in Dr. Sleep.
She was, yeah.
Okay, well, I don't know that I remember her from that, but she just had a familiar looking face to me. So, but I would say more so than anything, especially more so than her and the ghost, the evil entity is pretty generic fare. There's nothing particularly menacing about the character to me. That I mean, the design was decent, but as far as the thing of what it was doing, I don't know. It didn't seem like anything much. And I will say the over reliance of the Stay Puft Marshmallows gets like, that's one of those, even more so to me than the old Ghostbusters being in their uniform, is the reuse of those Stay Puft Marshmallow men.
All right.
And because it even seems like if you stayed for the post credit or mid credit or whatever you want to call it, there seems like there's a little bit hint of maybe getting that whole thing as a bigger plot again. And did you guys see that? I don't know. Well, you guys see it because you stay till the end of all the credits. So I'm sure you saw it.
Yes, we did see it.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Okay. So I was like, is that just a fun tag, or is that leading into what another story could be as far as finally corralling all those Stay Puft that are out there? And
you know, I just took it as a funny tag. I took it as just, say, here's some fun little scene. That was it.
I think I just took it as it's just for fun, because I think for me, their entire existence in this film is really just for kids. The whole idea of them is just for the kids to continue enjoying
and
the film.
And my 8-year-old daughter sitting next to me, she loved those parts.
She fucking loved it. That's what that's for. And that's fine with me. Like, I'm okay with that. Like, do I think they're necessary? Hell no, of course they're not necessary. But I think to keep the kids interested in the film, to keep young children in, you have to have some comedic relief that's not just adult jokes and adults joking with each other. You have to have something else going on. And I think that's what that is, just a relief for them.
I would agree, but I also agree that, I mean, even using them in Afterlife the way they were, you know, from one perspective is like, ugh, you know, do we really have to do the Stay Puffs again? But at the same time, it was, you know, that movie being the way it was, kind of nodding back to the original thing. I don't know. It was one of those things about Afterlife that I was fine with. But that, I would have been happy that that was it. I didn't need them to be brought back into this movie. It is an extra step of, like, pandering that's just like, okay. It is.
I don't disagree.
With that said, yeah, I mean, my daughter enjoyed it. I'm sure all the kids that are watching this movie, since, you know, kind of like you said, Bobby, this franchise is, I think, kind of moved more kind of pure family fare than like the original film was kind of structured to be. And I think this is evidence of that. Like, it's okay. Yeah. Like you're saying,
yeah, Michelle, the second film, definitely after the first film came out, it was definitely not created for, I guess, the viewing audience of young people, of kids.
Mm-hmm.
But right. We did. It was the 80s. We watched the hell out of that
movie. Oh, yeah. We all watched it.
Watched the shit out of that movie.
Yeah.
I remember watching it as a kid. Sorry. I remember feeling like I was watching a movie that was not meant for me. Like, oh, this is a funny movie for adults that I'm enjoying, but this is not a kid's movie. I remember feeling that way about it.
Yeah, I'd watch it with my parents. I'd be like, none of this really makes sense to me right now, but it's fun. Like, it was like, it's these guys being silly, busting ghosts. Like, I was all over it. And then by the time they created the second film, they definitely started moving that direction. I mean, you know, the second film has a river of slime. They're getting slimed in everything. There's a reason, because kids liked Slimer, and all the merchandise from the first film that was kind of pandered to kids was Slimer, and then the cartoon came out and Slimer was a thing. And so then the second movie, they made slime.
They laid into the slime.
They laid into it because we were kids of the 80s and we all watched Nickelodeon and it's slime, you know? We're kids. That's what kids like. They like slime. Your daughter likes slime. That's how it is. Welcome to being 8 years old, man, you know? So yeah, and then Afterlife came by and they were like, we need to make this a full family situation. And they started going into it and they've just leaned into it. And I'm also pretty okay with it, honestly.
I don't have a problem with that either.
If anything, I'm glad that there's some films that are starting to be not just for kids or not just for adults. I feel like there's so many films that are supposed to be for families and they're still just basically kids' movies. I'm like, well, this is an adult movie that's got some pandering to kids, and that's fine with me. I'd prefer this side than the other side, where they're trying to get the adults in. I'm like, this is just not for adults in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
So, I don't know. For me, I'm okay with that.
Along those lines, and again, going back with the Stay Puft, I feel like this would have been a perfect opportunity to make what Michelle said more of a reality from the animated series, where you have Slimer as part of the team, so somewhat, obviously not to that same level, but just more of a ghost friend that Finn Wolfhard's character is more like a buddy with. And they didn't.
It's like a Scooby-Doo situation, kind of almost.
Like a what?
In the cartoon, they made him kind of like the firehouse pet, and he was like kind of an honorary Ghostbuster.
Yeah.
And I could see where it doesn't even take it to that level, but kind of what you're saying, where Finn kind of keeps him as his the ghost pet that just hangs out in the firehouse, and he's just one of those that they all just kind of like go, yeah, we deal with him. There's really no point in catching him. He has no menace to him. He's just wants to eat junk food and exists. Exactly.
But the way they used him, it just felt kind of like, again, just sort of thrown in for nostalgia's sake, because he pops up a couple times and does a couple things and he's out. And it's just never resolved after that. It's just, they didn't think about catching him anymore. They didn't think about him being a part of the firehouse or anything like that. Like you said, Michelle, just sort of leaving him alone because they just don't think he's going to harm anything. He's just whatever.
Yeah,
but it just kind of threw it in there, and then just like I thought, just for the sake of nostalgia, and he doesn't really do much, but just exists there.
And who knows, if they do another film, a third film with this set, if they do, then maybe he is just kind of the firehouse ghost that just eats all their food, and they just kind of go, oh, it just is what it is.
Yeah, at this point, I don't know if this would work properly, but obviously you couldn't have the cast that you have in these movies, but I think almost in a certain sort of way, because, okay, I'm trying to gather my thoughts as I'm saying it, but at this point, I don't know what else they can do within Ghostbusters as a movie, because it's just kind of like, well, it's wash, rinse, and repeat. There's not a lot of different things you can do with the concept of it. And I almost feel like you could take this group of people in these movies, put different actors in the roles, and just make it a TV series. Because because all the other ghosts have escaped the old containment unit. So now they got to probably go and hunt all those ghosts again or whatever. And you just have a weekly series of them hunting ghosts and dealing with family issues. And there you go. You put it on, you know, HBO Max or whatever. And you have a Ghostbusters TV series or something. So I don't really know what you do for a movie anymore beyond this point, other than the further adventures of the Ghostbusters kind of thing.
I'll go ahead and say my prediction is, and I mean, we can get into the box office. We haven't, you know, really talked about how this did in the box office, but knowing how it did and compared to Afterlife, I would be surprised if we see another one.
I don't disagree.
I'm of the mindset, at least that's my prediction, is that this will be the end, at least for a while. I'm not saying ever. Obviously, you can really, in the movie industry, you can never say never. Like, yeah. You know,
I mean, you never know what could happen. They could come back in a few years, wait till the kids are a little older, and shoot it where basically, like, say, Phoebe's college-aged, and Trevor is trying to figure out if this is really what he wants to spend his life doing, because he's in his mid-20s now, and what the hell, and, you know... But yeah, at the end of the day, it would still be a pretty cut and dry, some weird ancient thing comes in, bad guy. You know, it's rinse and repeat, like you said, Bobby.
But
it's that way.
Yeah, I mean, it would seem to me, based on how we've seen it do this weekend compared to like Afterlife's opening weekend, which I think it made just a hair more than Afterlife, but Afterlife came in kind of during the recovery of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And this cost more money to make. And
did it? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I heard the budget was bigger than Afterlife was. And I mean, so really, in a way, it kind of declined in terms of what it's making, at least this opening weekend. And I mean, it definitely didn't grow in any way, I think, to kind of show that audiences are like, yeah, I want more Ghostbusters. And I don't know. It seems to me that the younger audiences right now, I don't think there's anything about Ghostbusters that is like appealing to them. Like, I don't feel any buzz. Like, you know, I scroll through social media just like everybody else, and I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not really seeing any chatter about Ghostbusters. No one really cares. Like, and you know, the marketing push was there. I mean, we were seeing them all on the late night shows, and Bill Murray wearing Ghostbuster stuff on, you know, everything he was doing. Like,
each theater had their own popcorn bucket. Like, it's definitely,
I don't feel
the
like
marketing was there for the
marketing
sure.
was there, but I don't feel like there was like a big, like, hey, everyone's excited about Ghostbusters coming back. That's the vibe I was getting. And maybe it doesn't help that Dune was so big that it's like we're all still coming off a Dune high.
I think that's a part of it. I think everybody went to go see Dune and everybody's kind of on a Dune high, and so that's happening. But I also just think it's just that we're the generation that grew up with these films, the original ones.
Right.
And this is an IP that's treasured to us. And while we are trying to pass it on to younger generations, it's just not working. It's not speaking to them. And I think that's the big problem, is that it does. It's even with a nice young cast, even with everyone involved in it, it still just isn't speaking to them. They're not interested in this.
Right.
I feel like I've noticed, like, the younger generations, they're not into kind of the same silly, the way our silly was when we were growing up. They're not into that.
I feel like if you look at what we got in this movie from a budget standpoint, I don't know that I saw a lot of the money on the screen, other than if you mean the money on the screen by Bill Murray and yeah, and all the other actors from the originals, Dan Aykroyd and
Ernie Hudson and
Ernie Hudson. Maybe their collective paychecks might make a dent into what that budget is. But
how much is Kamal going for nowadays?
Feel like it seems like that movie was made. That's why I was a little bit surprised, David, because it feels like that movie was probably around $85 million or so when I look at it on the screen. I don't recall a lot of huge effects or scenes where it felt like, man, yeah, that's like up there in terms of visuals that I'm seeing for the year. I don't know, because what did you you didn't say what the budget was for this.
No, just, I was trying to find it, but it was definitely there was a Variety article talking about the box office, and it definitely pointed out in the article that the budget was more, but it didn't give a number. Yeah. I don't think.
I see.
I'm going to paraphrase from it now a little bit. Plus, Frozen Empire carries a bigger budget than the last one, costing $100 million to produce and many millions more to market. It'll need to far outgross Afterlife, and then mentioning $204 million globally against $75 million budget. So yeah, I guess Afterlife had about $75 million budget compared to $100 for Frozen.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know that it's going to be able to do that with King Kong x Godzilla, Godzilla x King Kong coming out this weekend,
and right,
other movies subsequently. Yeah, and like you said, David, maybe this is where it ends for it. But at the same time, I'm wondering, because of the fact that for anybody that watched this movie, and I believe it started with the last movie, at the beginning there's like a ghost core thing that comes on that's like a production arm of Sony.
Yeah, yeah,
that's strictly for like Ghostbuster stuff. So I wonder, will that mean that they don't produce anymore, or will they go maybe more animated something for Ghostbusters, bringing it back to that kind of way of doing it for a little while? Or again, maybe the TV route is something that they could do. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to see where they go from here, though.
Yeah, I mean, I am too, and I could see a situation where, like you're describing, they find a way to continue the franchise maybe in another medium like TV or something, but or streaming. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know, that's my guess, is that we won't see another Ghostbusters for a bit, or at least they're not going to be in any rush
until
it's the, okay, we have just the right script. And and as a Ghostbusters fan, I love Ghostbusters. I'm kind of fine with that at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm going to say this, like, I've enjoyed, you know, these Ghostbusters movies we've gotten, but is there a part of me that's like, could see a world where we only ever got the first Ghostbusters and that was it? And I'd be like, that's fine. Like, in a way, every Ghostbusters movie since has always like, okay, how can we recreate that great first movie in a new way? And it's always to a certain extent, not quite worked. And I like Ghostbusters too. I don't think I like it as much as some people, but like that movie. But but you know, kind of like we've said about all these other Ghostbusters movies, they're all good. They're fine. This one, though, I don't know. I think it's probably the worst of the bunch for me.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a little while since I've seen the second one, but the second one's an interesting film because when it came out, the adults, I'll say, didn't enjoy it, but the kids did. And then as we've grown up, we've realized, oh, this movie's actually not that great. It's not as good, but it's okay. It's fine. But it has a lot of issues. And so, yeah, that's kind of, I think, what's happened with the second film. And, yeah, I don't know. I guess.
It's funny you say that, though, but like I've seen chatter even very recently, kind of in the, you know, midst of this new film coming out, like on Twitter, of people talking specifically about Ghostbusters 2 as like being like a kind of a cult following. Like, we love Ghostbusters 2. Oh, yeah, I've seen chatter like that. So
they're probably our age and they like it because they liked it when they were kids. But no, I don't know if I'd call it the worst one in the bunch. I don't know.
This one, Frozen Empire?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'd have to watch the second. It's been a little while since I've seen
this. Yeah, I'd have to watch it again, too.
I mean, you know, as much as I definitely don't enjoy Ghostbusters 2 as much as Ghostbusters 1, to an extent, though, like, I do enjoy it. It's a movie that still works with the original cast, and it does feel like a continuation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like, oh, hey, why are these old guys here? Like, it.
Right.
I don't know. Like, it works, but then, yeah, there's definitely things about it that it's like, even as someone who is like obviously knows it's Ghostbusters, you can't take it seriously. But then there's things like the Statue of Liberty bit and Ghostbusters 2 that I just go, okay, this is a bit much. Like, I don't know. Like, this is really taking me out.
It was for the kids, David. It was for the kids. You got to keep the kids engaged in the film somehow. Be it, you know, a Statue of Liberty walking down Fifth, or, you know, freaking little mini marshmallows tearing up a Walmart. You gotta keep it entertaining for the kiddos.
I was gonna say too, changing things up a little bit, going back to the, you know, the original Ghostbusters in this movie, and how, you know, I can say on one side that, yeah, I didn't really need them to get all suited up and everything, and I still stand by that. At the same time, you know, if you are going to use them, it was a bummer for me to basically see that Bill Murray, if you've watched the trailers for this movie, you've seen Bill Murray's appearances in this movie, really. He's not used in any way more than you see in those trailers, which was kind of a
maybe
bummer.
Maybe one way, I think. Because I didn't see all the trailers, so maybe I could be mistaken, but I'm just thinking of the scene where he's first introduced. I don't know if that was in the trailer.
I thought I saw that in a trailer or something.
I mean,
okay,
maybe I'm wrong.
The point is you watch the trailers, you basically watch Bill Murray.
I guess I expected him to be involved a little more than he was.
I like that Ray was involved more.
I do. I like that. Yeah. I think that's great.
Honestly, like, yeah, because he was underserved in the first one, in Afterlife.
Right.
But I think I thought it was nice. He was kind of a mentor, and he's kind of taken the charge of, like, no, we need to teach these kids. If we're going to pass the torch to them, we need to educate them on what they need to do.
Right.
And how to get information, how to know what they're doing, and going about dealing with certain ghosts and certain things.
But then also, I don't think I actually ever said how I felt about the ghost friend.
Melody.
I kind of am with you, Michelle. I'm not... I didn't know what to think of it, because I should also point out, I did not watch the animated stuff ever. As much as a fan of Ghostbusters as I was as a kid, it just, I don't know, that's something I never even had an interest in. I never watched it. So from my perspective, you know, having a ghost that's like full on just like, hey, I'm a regular person and I'm talking to you. I don't think we've seen anything like that in Ghostbusters before. And because it's my understanding, you do see that in the animated show.
From time to time, things like that would happen. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I've never seen that. So for me, I'm like, oh, I don't know what I think about this as like a thing in Ghostbusters, you know, because I hadn't seen that before. And I'm like, and then, yeah, just the whole necessity to have this kind of like side plot of she, you know, has a growing relationship with this ghost.
She has to use Phoebe just to do this one task.
Like, I don't know. I wasn't big into it either.
I was not into it. I don't think I like that heavy-handed uses of a ghost, like, of a ghost in the movies. And I'm saying this, it's hard to explain. Like, so, okay. I guess the best would be the second movie, Ghostbusters 2, and you see more humanistic apparitions like, you know, they have like the Titanic pulls up to port.
Right, right.
And the people are coming, and they're just kind of forms coming at you.
I mean,
you.
We've definitely seen human go. That's correct. Not, I don't have a problem with that.
And that doesn't bother me. That's what right. I'm saying. It's this jump from them kind of existing like that to, I'm going to sit down and have a conversation with you, and I'm going to walk down the street, and we're going to connect, and we're going to be besties. I'm going to go to your room, and we're just hanging out like a real, alive person. Like, it doesn't really work. It doesn't work for me that much. It's a little too heavy-handed. It's, I don't know. It's trying to be too neat and something that's kind of a messy topic. Like, I don't know.
I assume that the read on the scene of her first going out to, was it Washington Square Park with her chess set in the middle of the night or whatever, all by herself, and she sets up the chess set, and I guess the read is that she's hoping like her grandfather is going to play chess with her, but then, hey, because when the girl appears, she kind of has this look of like, oh, like...
I think she actually vocally says, oh.
Yeah.
She literally is like, disappointment.
But I don't know. My first, as I'm watching that, I guess I'm watching it thinking, okay, is that where we're going with this? Because otherwise, I'm like, what is she doing? Like, why is she, in the middle of the night, is she setting up a chess set? I don't know. There's something about the setup of that I found.
Yeah, it was almost, so I think what you're saying, it's like, part of me was like, oh, this must be something she does from time to time to go play with her grandpa to clear her head or something. Right, and that was the way I kind of was first reading into the scene, as she's basically setting up. Like, it's a very random thing to happen.
But clearly, I don't think that's actually what was going down. Like,
it was a random moment where she was like, I'm mad and I'm going to go clear my head. I'm going to go play chess for the very first time. In the square, and then this ghost shows up. Whereas my first read on it was that, oh, this must be something she figured out a while ago where she could go and do this and he'd show up and play with her and she's kind of clearing her head. Like, this is a frequent thing. And that's not what it was. It was supposed to be like, this is just randomly happening at the spur of the moment. This is what she decided to do. Am I wrong?
No, I agree. I agree that...
It was weird in that sense.
But then it's like, wait, did his ghost travel from Oklahoma to New York? Or, you know, does he make appearances as far as we know? Or maybe they put him in a ghost trap. And
but at the same time, I'm glad that it wasn't. Them. I'm glad that it wasn't him, though.
Oh, no, I didn't need to see. That's a moment at the end of Afterlife I'm totally cool with.
Oh, it was good. They wrapped that good.
It's good. But that bow is pretty. Do not do that again. And yeah, I would have been very surprised. I would have been
annoyed.
If they had gone down that road again.
No, that was a pretty bow they put at the end of it with his character moving on. Right. And I was like, so there was a part of me that as that scene was going on, I was like, oh, I bring our grandpa back? And I was kind of like, but it was done so well. Like, these are all the thoughts that are floating through my head as I'm watching the scene. And then when it turned to be another ghost, I was like, oh, relief. Okay, that's cool. But then as the ghost develops, I'm like, this is not, okay, this didn't need to.
Not enough for you.
This didn't need to go that far. Like, we're officially too much. Anyways.
I was trying to think of anything else. I did find myself watching the movie waiting for a scene that never happened that's in the trailer.
No, it's not coming to me.
It's at the very, it's the very last shot of the teaser trailer.
Okay.
And maybe I was a little more attuned to this because having cosplayed now as a Ghostbusters, I remember when the teaser trailer first came out and the community around cosplaying as Ghostbusters was immediately like, okay, what are these red jackets? And everyone was sourcing out like where the red jackets come from. And if you want to, you know, make one yourself. So I remember, okay, we finally see the red coats. But the only characters we ever see wear them in the movie, I think, are Lucky and the other guy that works with her. The new science
dude, yeah.
Basically, they work in that science office.
The science
And I think
geek.
They're the only two that ever put them on. But in the teaser,
Lars.
There's a shot at the very end of the teaser of the four of the main Ghostbusters wearing, not the old Ghostbusters, but the new ones.
Yeah, like everybody had the red coat.
That never happens in the movie.
Like Phoebe, they all had the red coat on. No, it's funny you say that.
Well, I guess so I'm watching the movie imagining, I'm like, well, under what circumstance are they going to now like change into these red coats? Because I saw it in the teaser. But I mean, I know just like you guys that in this day and age, there's shots and trailers that don't make the cut. But yeah.
I felt like the The beach scene seems shorter than what they were teasing in the trailer, too. But
maybe
there seemed to be more of the beach situation happening in the teaser than there actually was up on film.
Yeah, no, that was just a thing I noticed. I found myself thinking about, okay, so when are they going to put all the red coats on? And I'm like, oh, they never do.
They never do. So let me ask you, are you going to expand your costume to the red coat now or no?
No, I'm good. We live in Orlando. I don't need to wear a red coat. Because if I did that, then I'd have to wear a different proton pack, right? Like, well, they do wear these. And speaking of, I have the HasLab. The Hasbro HasLab proton pack that they came out with, in the past couple years or whatever. Apparently, they used these packs for some of the packs in the movie.
Oh, seriously? Shut up.
Yeah, I've read a quote where it got screen time. And that actually makes sense because in the scene where she takes her pack apart, mm-hmm. and she takes apart this main, mm-hmm. what I forget what this part of the...
And the pack is called the bottom.
She opens it up because this pack opens up like that.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking, man, that does look just like the Hasbro pack. And
hilarious.
Apparently her pack is a HasLab pack, which I'm like,
that's
really?
Awesome.
I mean, I think they kind of spruce it up a little bit. But.
Well, I'm sure that they put on their movie magic makeup it's pretty dirty. Like they do in Walking Dead. You have to make pretty dirt.
All right.
Yeah, that's cool though. Look at you.
Yeah. But anyway, my point being, I'm not going to make a red coat. If I got the authentic one, by the way, it is not a cheap coat.
Oh my God, no, it is not. It was like $375, right?
It's like a $500 coat or something. Oh. It's something.
Yeah, it's for like when you go to Greenland in your life. When you get that magical trip to Greenland, that's the coat you get. You're going to Antarctica? This is the coat you get. That's right. It was like $500. It was like $595.
Yeah, I forget.
That's right.
But anyway.
Jesus, God. So expensive. Such an expensive coat.
I was thinking, too, like, going back to this being more of a family-friendly movie than the franchise kind of started with. We commented too, like watching the trailers, like the dynamic of different trailers that played in front of this movie.
There were some trailers. I was like, these are questionable for a film that's PG-13, my friend. There was R trailers playing. I was like,
well, there was no, I mean, there are, trailers for R-rated movies. There was no Red Band trailers, but.
Okay. No, there was no Red Band trailers. But they were definitely like R-rated films.
I mean, I think I was a little more attuned to it. We took the kids. So yeah. I've got, my
8-year-old, 12-year-old.
But, we're mostly had been kind of family-friendly trailer affair. And then suddenly it comes to the trailer for Tarot. And it's like, oh, man, my daughter's going to hate this.
And she was like, nope, 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 nope. And then there was another trailer, too, that we were like, oh, Jesus, really? Which one was it? There was two trailers that we both were like, this didn't need to be on before Ghostbusters.
I forget. There was something else, and I can't remember what it was.
It was not
I think
necessary.
It was more like a sexually kind of
Oh, Champions.
Not Champions. Oh, yes.
Partners. Yeah, nope.
No, it is the Zendaya film. Yeah. Challengers.
Challengers. God, yes. Challengers. Yeah. I was like, wow, I got Challengers up there. Okay. I mean, like, it's warning you before it even starts. It's like sexual content. I was like, sexual.
Oh, yeah. It was like graphic nudity was one of the.
Graphic nudity. PG-13.
I was like,
oh, shit.
What's
happening right now?
I know. When I saw that in the Green Band, I was like, oh, man. Oh, what is the trailer for this for? There's nothing in that trailer.
Challengers is fine. But then, yeah, for Tarot comes up, and I was like, oh Jesus. God. I was like, man, your daughter's going to run out of this film before the film even starts. She did good, though.
No, she did fine. She said she enjoyed the movie.
I was that age when I saw the second one. I remember going to the second one well, actually. My mom drove through a snowstorm to get us to the movie theater. We were in Germany. And we had to drive to the base because we lived off base. And my brothers, who were 2 years younger than me, were pooping the pants. Like, they were so scared in the theater. And I think I got scared at one moment, but like, yeah, I remember vividly seeing that film. And I was your daughter. I was exactly your daughter's age when I saw that film. So it's funny to me.
Well, we're almost out of time, but we haven't at all discussed. So I just want to ask you guys really quick to touch on, we haven't really talked about Kumail Nanjiani's character at all. What did you guys think of him, Bobby? Bobby, what did you think of that character?
I thought he worked sometimes, and other times I thought it was kind of a little bit over the top. And I don't know, so I guess that's not necessarily out of place in a movie like this. But
right.
Yeah, sometimes it worked, but sometimes it didn't. Overall, I felt like I don't know that they would use him more than this. Because he has powers, so I don't know that you would have a Ghostbuster on your team that has actual powers. Right. So,
well, I mean, but you never know. I mean,
yeah, you never know for sure. But no, I mean, I think in the end, I he kind of grew on me, and I liked it. But it definitely was a rocky kind of relationship with the character.
Was he the
Firemaster?
Firemaster. So kind of like the Keymaster.
Yeah.
Kind of right.
Thing. Yeah. And that's what I kept thinking. I'm like, are they just trying to make like a Keymaster situation?
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm like,
yeah, you have your main villain going, are you the Fire Master? Like,
yeah. Right. It was exactly. Like, it was a little eye rolly.
Yeah, a little bit.
It was a little eye rolly. And in one sense, I get why they kind of need that character because it does make sense at the end of the film. But through most of the film, I'm going, is it necessary? Questioning everything now. Like, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I have nothing to add. It was a character. I kind of agree with you, Bobby. It was like, yeah, I like him as an actor, first of all, big fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I like seeing him in anything, and I think he does a good job in this overall. The character, though, as a character in the movie, I was kind of like, I don't know, like. Anyway.
But like I said, I think Patton Oswalt's character works because you get him for just the right amount of time and he's setting a scene, he's giving you the information, and he works as a... He's the next Ray.
He's the next position.
The next
device.
Right. Like, should this progress... Again, I don't think this is going to progress, but if this progresses, he would be their, you know, historian of knowledge person that they would go to figure the lore out about a situation.
No, I'm good with that. I would agree. That does remind me, though. I mean, this is like a very nitpicky thing, but I don't think I was a big fan of the decision to, when he is explaining the history of this character, which I don't even remember.
Animation?
The whole like going to an animation of it. I was like, I don't know. That kind of like took me out of it in a way. And I'm like, I don't know. This doesn't feel like this belongs in a Ghostbusters movie. Like, I think I would have been happier with him literally just like, I'm
flipping pages,
going to a marker board and drawing what the shape of him real quick as I'm frantically telling you this story about this character, and like pulling out books to show you a picture of it or something like that,
pictures of glyphs or something,
instead of like, hey, I'm narrating basically an animation.
I didn't bump on it. If anything, I think my thought while I was watching that was like, well, I'm glad they didn't like have random people act this out in a flashback scene.
Oh, yeah, that would have been.
And that would have really been we've been there. We've done it a gajillion times. And so for that, that wouldn't have worked. And then I'm saying this, and the whole opening scene of like, what was that, 1907 New York City and the fire department? Yeah. That totally worked. I was like, okay, this is cool. Like, I liked the introduction to our ghost villain in this way. That worked for me. Okay. I liked that a lot, actually. I was pretty impressed with that. I was like, this is a solid opening for this film. It sets the stage for what we're up against. But no, I don't know. The animation was whatever. Like I said, I was mostly just happy they didn't have actors acting out a flashbacky in actions.
Right.
I guess I didn't give it a second thought, to be honest. I think the way you're describing it, David, it would have worked especially if this was the first movie, I think, in that way, having like a him on the board or just telling it and through the pages and stuff. But as we have kind of talked about within this review, and that this is more of a family-friendly movie, I think the animation kind of goes par for the course with this newer version of a Ghostbusters movie, I suppose.
Cool. It was just, yeah, like I said, it's a nitpicky kind of thing for me. I'm not like, I didn't hate it, but...
It stood out to you.
It stood out as a thing that, as I was watching it going, hey, if I had made this movie, I don't think I'd have done this. I would have done this instead. But again,
I will say,
didn't really take, didn't kill it for me.
So, sorry. I was just going to say, my two favorite things in this movie were... And I wish we could have seen more of it to a certain degree. There was a little bit more of it. The tech in the beginning of the movie, you see they have like this flying trap that they use as a drone kind of thing.
Yep.
That is flying around and stuff. And I say, oh, that's kind of a cool concept and idea to do. And then, of course, you got the bigger containment unit and how they were doing stuff with that. I was like, I would like to see more of that. They need, if they were to continue forward, a smart kind of inventor type tech guy, which maybe is one character, the guy with the curly hair and glasses, I think he had, that was working on the team with Ernie Hudson's character or Winston's character. Yeah, maybe someone like him, I think, might be that kind of guy. Or they could make him that kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I like that. And then also the other thing that I really liked that made me smile was at the end of the movie playing the Ghostbusters song. That felt like, okay, yeah, this is Ghostbusters. And it went through the whole song. And even people in the audience. I had a pretty decently mixed audience with younger and older people. And everybody seemed to be enjoying that part of the movie too, as it's ending and the Ghostbusters theme is on and people were kind of singing the I Ain't Afraid of No Ghost kind of thing. It was that was fun. That was cute at the end there.
I
kind of like the last shots of them in front of the firehouse. It's very reminiscent of the first and second film where the heroes come out and there's a crowd and everybody's excited and the news crews are there. It was like, okay, this is definitely panhandling to me, but I'm loving it. Like, I kind of like that, you know? It's like they kind of wrap up and, you know, mom tosses the keys to her kid and she's like, all right, we're going to do this. Like, you're an adult. And, you know, I liked that scene. That whole scene, I think, worked for me, you know? It was like, aw. Gave me the warm feelings.
Aw.
Yeah.
Well, I guess last chance. Any last thoughts before we wrap things up? That's Bobby and Michelle, you guys good?
Good.
All right. Well, that's Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. Thanks for joining us for the review. As always, we would love to hear your thoughts as well. You can email us at feedback@flickereffect.com. You can reach out to us as well on Twitter and Instagram @flicker_effect. We would love to hear from you. With that, I'm Dave Lott.
I'm Bobby Jackson.
And I'm Michelle Hillard.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.